We only have 10 seconds in this portion.
The Kennedy of Guatemala is overthrown again by the Dulles brothers, partly because they were representatives of United Fruit. United Fruit was a major power player in Guatemala.
We're going to leave it there, but we're going to do part two, and we're going to post online at democracynow.org. David Talbot is author of the new book, The Devil's Chessboard, Alan Dulles, the CIA, and the Rise of America's Secret Government. David Talbot is founder and former and editor-in-chief at Salon. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Featuring nothing but good for music that puts you in the mood. Relationship conversations that makes you think about love. So tune in every other Monday nights from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. and rock out to the best R&B show in Long Island. Enter the room if you dare. Into the Velvet Room.
Yes, yes. Enter. Okay. It's 6 o'clock. This is WUSB Stony Brook. That means one thing. On Tuesday evenings, it's time for Off the Wall. Off the Wall. I'm excited.
What horrible noise that was, Kyle. Make that noise again. Yeah, that's what we have to deal with here.
Wow.
That's when you turn down the volume.
Indeed. It's down. Hey, welcome. This is Off the Wall. I am your guest, host, and engineer, and here's
producer
your
host. Of static.
Producer of melodic and unmelodic static. Well, we'll produce all kinds of static, but this is Off the Wall, and we talk about all kinds of stuff. So, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Of course, everyone is getting their popcorn ready and excited for the show.
Popcorn, that's what I forgot. How can we do a show without popcorn?
We stop by your local theater and we get ourselves a bag of popcorn to go. I've seen people do it.
Okay, I'll be right back.
It's illegal.
Wait, what show are you talking about? Are you talking about this show, right?
Well, I presume that's why everyone is getting tucked in and cozied up to their various streaming media.
You mean the Mets. That's what you mean. The Mets game tonight. That's what you're talking about. That show.
No.
I'm
not talking about that show either, you know. Actually, but good luck to them. Break a leg.
Oh, that's not funny. Oh, my God. It's too soon, Kyle. Too soon. By the way, you didn't say your name. You're Kyle. I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Kyle. And that's Emmanuel.
Yes, it is.
I go by that, and
that was an unfortunate incident on Saturday night when the Mets shortstop got his leg broken by
awful.
The Dodger jerk.
As someone who has fractured themselves recently, my heart goes out. I mean, that's rough play there.
You know what? Even if you asked to come back to Brooklyn now, I don't think we'd let you. I just don't think we would. There's professional sports teams now in Brooklyn. There's the Islanders. There's the Nets. You know, but there's no room for that kind of shenanigan in the metropolitan area. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And we got the Mets, and the Mets are on the verge of winning tonight, so that would be kind of cool. It's always neat when the Mets win. Although last night they almost blew it. They had something like a 13-4 lead in the last possible inning. All of a sudden, everyone started getting hits for the Dodgers, and I was like, they really can't blow it this bad, can they? With 13-4.
I like that though. It's a reality check, and you can. Those little things slip in,
uh-huh.
And you can lose it really quickly. And it's great to watch. It's fun.
It's like a collective pain that we feel in Queens. You know, it's just. I remember there was one season a number of years ago where the Mets were in first place practically every day of the season except the last day when they got eliminated. And I just remember this picture of this kid in the front cover of the Daily News. It looked like, you know, his entire family had been killed. That was the expression on his face. I'd like to know. I'd like to check in and see if that kid ever recovered and if he's living a normal life now, if he's institutionalized. Some people take this too seriously. It's a damn – I know it's not a game for the people playing because they make a lot of money, but it's a damn game. And just deal with it. And if you lose, you lose. If you win, you win. It's not you winning or losing. It's you just watching.
That's right. Don't get caught up in it. You're not actually out on the field. And if you are, don't get caught up in it either.
I'll sit down now. But, it gets me riled.
Yeah, it's an occupation at the game, but don't take work home if that's your line of work. Anyway,
I'm
actually talking about the debates.
Debates. Is that a Mexican? Debates.
Yeah.
That's right. The debates are tonight. The Democratic debates. We almost forgot about the Democratic debates because we were so caught up in the Republican debates. But, yeah, there's Democratic candidates, too.
If you're unfamiliar, yes, there are... another form of debate. There's several parties in this country, and of the two major ones, we've only seen one side of it. They recall we're standing in front of a plane, I believe.
Oh, at the Ronald Reagan Airport.
Yeah.
I mean, Ronald Reagan Live, whatever that is.
One of the many debates, and that was... For their side, there was, I think, two. It was like a two-part series, three-part series. I don't know. Anyway, this is the first of the Democrats. The first time they get a stage set for the dialogue. Where, in general terms, are they coming from? What is their platform? That is what we'll see tonight from Vegas.
What is their platforms?
What is their platform?
No, what are... Oh, boy. What are their platforms?
What are their...
It's a debate. They differ with each other. Right?
So. Yeah, I think also, though, I'm making the distinction between parties because, you know, Republicans have made their case. They've made it clear what generally they're going to be talking about. So I said generally But you're right there, too. Okay, sure.
All right, so we can, let's try this, because I only just learned this recently.
Uh-huh.
That, I mean, I knew there were more than two candidates, but I didn't know that, that five would be participating in debates tonight. So let's see if we can name the candidates. There's Hillary Clinton. There's Bernie Sanders. Okay, now I did that part. Those are two of the biggest ones. You do the rest.
O'Malley.
You gotta say the whole name, Kyle, out of respect. I'm sorry. It's so unfair because they've gotten so little press time that, you know, it's really, you know, on the CNN promo, they just flash their names for a second. They flash three names. I thought those were the anchors. It was you know, Clinton and Sanders, and then these three names that I really thought were the people that were moderating the debate. And then I realized, no, those are the three other candidates that we never talk about.
Yeah, so it's O'Malley, Chaffee, and Webb.
Wasn't there a Lincoln in there somewhere?
Lincoln?
There's a Lincoln in there somewhere. Not well, okay. I think his first name is Lincoln.
First name, yeah. I'm saying last name.
So wait, is he? No, it's Jim Webb. Okay, I know that much.
Okay.
And it's not Lincoln O'Malley. What was the other one you said?
Webb.
Okay, just said
Chaffee.
It. Chaffee. So Lincoln Chaffee.
Lincoln
That's
Chaffee.
Be the guy's
name. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, folks, you know, okay, I know you're on your damn Wikipedia and Google News, and you can say, "Oh, wow, what idiots these people are! They don't even know." But we don't have that in front of us. We're closing our eyes and just, you know, getting this out of our heads.
Yeah, memory.
Try that.
It's good exercise. Good to use the old noggin. And yeah. So
Walter O'Malley. I'm thinking Walter O'Malley.
It's a little foggy.
You know what's a little foggy is the fact that there's going to be, in addition to Bernie Sanders, just three white-haired white guys on stage, and we're going to have a difficulty telling them apart, you know, because we don't know who they are to start with. And they're going to, and they're going to be competing with each other. The one thing that I think I can say, though...
And Hillary's not that far off.
Well, Hillary, I can tell the difference. No, I can definitely tell the difference.
She'll have good hair.
Why do we say Hillary? We always say the first name.
Oh, you're right. That's
why
terrible.
Is that? No, everyone does it, but why?
Miss Clinton? How do we refer to her?
Ms. Clinton? I'm not going to do that.
Senator? What's the appropriate way?
Clinton would be the way we say it everybody
Clinton.
Else.
Yeah, why do we say Hillary? Are we that familiar with her? You're right.
Well, maybe we just feel it's rude to call a woman by her last name.
Hillary. No, she should have that respect. It's and she has a position. Is she still a senator?
Palin. What do you think of? I think of Michael Palin.
We don't call her Sarah.
Well, I don't call her that either. There's other names I have, but... Yeah, it's something that always bugged me, and I think
distinction.
She sort of plays into that herself. Maybe it's just like an affectionate type thing. Although I really don't think the Republicans are being affectionate.
Right, like folksy and familiar, because it's really hard for her to pull off in
it's
general.
It's a good name.
Like,
it's a good name to say. Yeah. But you know, you can't say Jim when you talk about Jim Webb.
Nah.
Because there's so many damn Jims.
Well, there's then, and on the other side, the whole Jeb thing.
Bernie works. Yeah.
I can go, maybe that's it. She wants to be up there on first name basis because people know, love, and like Bernie.
They do?
Well, I mean, don't you? That rolls off the tongue. That's what I think of when I say it.
I was looking at a poll today, and there are less Americans that would vote for a socialist than would vote for a Muslim. Think about that. With all the controversy over certain remarks that were made a couple of weeks ago.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. And, A mass killer was just a little bit below that, I think. So yeah, we have a long way to go. But
you think it's all hype?
Well, yeah, a lot of it is. A lot of it is how questions are phrased and how things are spun.
Yeah.
But I do think it's going to be interesting tonight. I don't know. Jim Webb is the guy I think is the most conservative of the bunch. I think you'll probably see that come out tonight.
Okay.
He basically supports... strengthening the border and more military type action and things like that. And was it I'm not sure.
Really?
Yeah, it was Chaffee that used to be a Republican too. Mm-hmm. Although he's a lot less Republican now since he's a Democrat. He's in favor of more health care and things like that. And O'Malley, I know, was born in Washington D.C. and was mayor of Baltimore and I think governor of Maryland as well. So he was, like, on the wire or something.
That's right, yeah. That's interesting. He's going to be there as well. We'll get to know them. We'll get to hear what they have to say. They will have their political wares out for us to look at. And the rhetoric will be in high, high, high gear.
Yes.
I'm certain.
Yes. Wait, the Mets game you're talking about. Are you talking about that or are you talking about the debate? Because they're both on at the same time.
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be really, really tough. How are we going to... Whose idea was that? I mean, everybody in Citi Field is going to want to watch. I said it right this time. I didn't say Shea Stadium. Everyone in Citi Field is going to be wanting to see the debate, not the game. So it's going to be a really tough choice.
Well, they'll be checking their devices, I'm sure, for the various coverage and so on and so forth.
Okay, Martin O'Malley. It wasn't Walter O'Malley. I don't know who Walter O'Malley is. Martin O'Malley, that's his name. And he's former Maryland governor, former Virginia governor, Jim Webb. Don't you hate it when you select a web page and then it jumps while you're reading it to something? Why does it do that?
Walter is his character in The Wire, right?
Was he really in The Wire?
No.
I don't know. He was Proposition Joe, I think.
Okay, got it. Yeah, actually, you're right.
Former Rhode Island governor, Lincoln Chafee. So they're all former governors. Think about that, you know?
Wow.
And wait, Bernie Sanders was governor of Vermont.
You're right.
Hillary Clinton was never governor of anything. Yeah. What do you think about that? So it's one senator versus four governors.
Okay.
You know what that means.
She was Secretary of State, though.
Okay. But still not governor.
Okay.
Or mayor.
How about First Lady? Which one of them was First Lady?
I don't know if that qualifies.
You what?
First Lady's not an elected position.
Are you?
Well, it's elected for the guy that married her, I suppose.
Diminishing
but...
the...
What's Bill going to be called if she gets... See, I said Bill, so yeah, I guess you can do that.
First
Maybe
Hubby.
We say Hillary because there's also a Bill, you know, and there's two of them.
A Billary.
But we just say George W., you know, when we talk about Bush, because there's so many damn Bushes. I don't know. I don't know why we talk the way we do.
Mm.
But, yeah, she was not a governor, so look for that tonight. And also I hear Donald Trump is going to be live tweeting because he just can't keep away from this. You know, imagine, it's in Las Vegas. Wouldn't he love to be on center stage in Las Vegas? But he can't. He's not allowed. Mm. He has to stay home in New York.
I know,
he's
right?
He's going to be live tweeting it and trying to steal all the thunder.
It will be absolutely the only reason for him to say anything because it does not involve him.
Uh-huh. You know, I guess Wolf Blitzer is going to be there. Probably in the middle of the debate, he's going to say, Ms. Clinton, Donald Trump just tweeted, and you'll have to respond to something that moron said on Twitter, you know, and just go above all of the other questions that are important, you know, having to do with, you know, with the world. What would
That's
you ask?
That's too real of time. As far as I like my coverage.
Yeah, it is. It's a little too real. But what would you ask if you had a chance? Let's say we have a chance. Let's say they're listening to us right now, and we each could ask a question of all the candidates. One question, all candidates. Yeah. That's really unfair, isn't it? I can't even think of anything myself.
Well, they wouldn't have a debate if it was just a one-question show.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
true.
There's a lot of questions to be asked.
It should be something they disagree on. It should be something that they, you know.
I think you would want to say what question that's not being asked would you be interested in hearing an answer on?
All right. I would ask, why is it that when Kyle broke his hand in Canada, it cost less to get it fixed with cash than it did to come back here and pay insurance to have it not covered? You know, and what will you do about that?
Yeah. Why doesn't affordable health care work?
It's not affordable, and it's not health care, you know. Yeah. I'd like for it to be at least one of those two.
With so, emphasis on people who are independent.
Or how about
or
this?
Or low income, or both.
Let's forget about Ukraine, and Iraq, and Iran, and Syria, and, Somalia, and any other countries that right now we're involved in one way or another.
I thought you were going to say have better health care.
No, that could be another question. What is the next country that you conceive of us bombing?
Okay.
You know, to see what, you know, what they come up with. Because that's always, you know, a president, a sort of a rite of passage.
What is the first country you will bomb when you get into office?
No, you don't want to hold them to it. What country would you like to bomb? What country do you envision possibly bombing?
Where are you interested in dropping the most
it's what
artillery.
We do. It's
okay.
We drop bombs on places. And, you know, some countries are known for wine. Some countries are known for paintings. Some countries are known for downhill skiing.
Yes.
We're known for dropping bombs. I mean, it's, you know, I believe in taking pride in your culture, and that's kind of what we've brought to the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe bring it out a bit. We haven't bombed anything in South America for a while. All right, there's that.
True.
Asia, well, we're still sort of getting over that.
What about the Arctic? I mean,
not really a lot of countries up there.
That's fine. I mean, we could just bomb stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose.
Like a show of power for all the countries that are trying to, like, claim area there. And we can, like, maybe rationalize it as some sort of, like, habitat reconstruction or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, I would like to have different questions asked, but I'm sure we'll just get the same things that we usually do. It might be lively, though. It might be interesting. I'm looking forward to Bernie Sanders. I think he brings the most conversation to the table.
Green bombing, that's great.
So, green bombing?
Yeah, I like that. It's like sustainable.
Wow. Speaking of sustainable, we saw some solar panels being installed yesterday.
That's right. We took a trip,
mm-hmm.
and it is basically a former grass field. Actually grass, like commercial grass.
Literal grass field, a sod farm.
Yeah, those guys that come with the truck and put the... Yeah, well, this is where it comes from. It looks like they subdivided it, and it's this massive stretch that mm-hmm. they're busily working on, and you can see the whole evolution of how they're doing it. They're doing it very, very quickly. I love the energy and action involved. Mm-hmm. They're very busy, and it's really exciting to see how physically it works and what it takes to get that infrastructure in.
They were busy on Columbus Day.
Yes.
Columbus Day, a holiday. Like, basically commemorating the founding of this country, which did not exist before Christopher Columbus stepped on it and said, here I am.
Yes.
You know, and that shows how little respect these solar people have for this great nation by working on Columbus Day like that to put renewable energy in. But, yeah, it's in Shoreham, site of the former nuclear power plant, which we also saw, by the way.
We visited there as well, and it's really interesting what they're doing, like how that's changed. And in fact, I think the utility formerly known as Long Island Power Authority,
which was formerly known as LOCO.
LOCO.
Long Island Lighting Company.
Yeah.
Well, they were widely hated.
Nobody liked them.
No.
Well, they actually still maintain that site. There are two jet engines there that basically are fixed. They don't move anywhere. They're a fixed installation, but they're really called gas turbines. They're also on cruise ships and stuff for power generation. There are two of them, 50 megawatt, I believe, is their maximum trick-outableness. But anyway, they supply power using the same switchable gear system that would have been coming off of the steam turbine there. So they've sort of retrofitted it to use gas, and they also co-locate other stuff for the utility there. And they have looked into erecting large wind turbines, like the real kind, the big, big ones. They wanted two. They looked at six different sites. They looked at the possibility of three turbines, and I think that would be really cool to put right where this old reactor building was in a real show of, demonstrating. I mean, they have to look at the transmissions, they have to look at how these wind turbines work, get it in the shop, so to speak, and look under the hood, figure out how operationally they would do that, and then maybe look at other sites. It's a really exciting thing, and to have the solar panels right across the way, also very, very exciting.
Well, what we should mention, for those who don't know, is that the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant was a widely contested nuclear plant that never actually was completed here on Long Island. It was the only one on Long Island that made it to that stage. There were, I believe, two others that were proposed. There was Jamesport out east. There was Lloyd Harbor. I think that's out west somewhere. I don't even know, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Do you know at one point they wanted to build a nuclear power plant on in that part of Queens, right next to Roosevelt Island? You can see the smokestacks as you cross the Queensboro Bridge. That's how short-sighted these people
that's
were.
That's way too close.
A nuclear power plant in New York City. So
anybody could have told you that. Nobody wants to be near that.
A lot of cooler heads prevailed, but we still had to get to the point of shutting down this nuclear power plant. And I was part of that. That was one of the first things I was involved in when I came to Stony Brook, was helping in that anti-nuclear fervor that was starting to catch on. And it took a while. It was right after, we were looking it up actually yesterday as we were driving by it.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1979, right after Three Mile Island happened,
mm-hmm.
that there was predictably a lot of anti-nuclear spirit in the country. There had been before.
Strong sentiment.
This really gave it a lot of energy. No pun intended.
Too close to home. Yeah, definitely.
And I remember that day. It was on June 3rd in 1979 when all these people gathered on the beach. It was a rainy day, but I think over 10,000 people, maybe 15,000 people gathered on the beach to protest. I wasn't a part of that. I was a part of the civil disobedience. I think about 600 or so people got arrested climbing the fence at Shoreham. I actually was handcuffed to Dave Dallinger, one of the 1960s protest leaders, and right next to Jerry Rubin, because the two of them were hanging out together.
Wow.
I just somehow happened to be right next to them, which was really, really interesting. I remember this, too. This is also kind of interesting.
Sure.
The number that was on Dave Dallinger's registration, I guess, when you get arrested, you get a number, was the same number as the cop who arrested him, which I thought was really funny. And
whoa.
I pointed it out to him, and he thought it was funny, too, and that was pretty much the extent of my contact. But that was a magical day because it really felt like we were doing something. We were making change. Literally, thousands of people walking through the rainy streets of Shoreham, Long Island, on that day in June, making history. And I got to say, the cops treated us very well. They were very respectful of us. They treated us nicely while we were in jail. Everybody got bailed out or let go and got ACLDs. Nobody really, I don't think, got in trouble. And eventually that plant was shut down. The government changed and the feelings changed. And it just was basically seen as a very bad idea. The thing is, so much money was spent on that plant. That it was a huge waste. I think you looked up the figures yesterday, how much we continue to pay for it, right? It was something like 3% of our electric bill or something?
Well, the cost originally was $6 billion to build it,
uh-huh.
and then it cost $50 million to move the fuel. Maybe okay. $6 million to...
Cost a lot of money.
You can look it up.
Yeah,
but
I don't know how
I think
much.
It cost the same to build it as it did to shut it down.
Okay.
Like, just the bill to move the fuel, which was footed by a power utility in Pennsylvania, I guess, the bill was footed by them. It was $50 million to move it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of costs in remediating and cleaning up these places.
The thing that bugs me is that, that plant was widely supported by the locals of Shoreham. You know why? Because having a nuclear power plant in your backyard really brings down your property taxes quite a bit.
Oh, the cost. Yeah. It was amortized. Absolutely. The cost was added to LIPA customers' bill. So that was...
Oh, that's afterwards. I'm talking about
afterwards.
Before.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Before. Basically, their property taxes went way down. They got great schools out of it. So they supported the nuclear power plant.
Those
being
are the
there.
Incentives, I see.
Incentives,
yeah.
And now a lot of the people in the same area are raising hell over, oh, my God, a solar farm. That looks so ugly. It's just basically, light shining down on glass.
They
and
want
those will be the same people that will object to a wind turbine on the very site of the Shoreham nuclear power plant. It's insane.
Well, it's cynical, but honestly, you can't be surprised. People want whatever they can get.
Mm-hmm.
They see a good thing. How can I slip and fall? I mean, that's kind of there's an element of that, I think. And then people, they see something going up in their backyard. They know, oh, there's a lot of money. Oh, that's some new metal you got there. That kind of gets into, well, what can I get out of it?
Look, when you put a nuclear power plant in your backyard, you lose your right to complain about anything else that goes up in your backyard.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I think
and
so.
And the thing that also gets me is the number of people today, intelligent people today, that are pro-nuclear because they see it as contributing less fossil fuels and being less pollutant. What they fail to realize is the tremendous cost of running nuclear power plants as far as what do you do with the waste?
Yeah, we were talking about ships, how ship reactors are stored a couple weeks
and,
ago.
And how are they stored?
They're stored in an open pit
uh-huh.
on the Hanford site, which is actually where the B reactor was historically located. And that was the reactor that made the plutonium that did all of the research and wartime use for early nuclear weapons.
And that's out in Washington State, right?
Yeah, and it's now a historical landmark. They're trying to do tours there now, apparently.
That's low-level radiation, right?
Correct. It's It's deemed low level. It's not stuff you want to be around, but it's safed, in other words, so that they can store it. And it just sits in an open pit, basically on the site, because that site itself is perpetually being cleaned up and will take some time to be less toxic. It's a lot better now, and there's been some mismanagement and stuff at the site. But it's this sort of logical place because it's itself is very toxic. Well, so let's just dump stuff there, too.
There's other waste, too, that comes from nuclear power plants that has to be stored deeply, right, and kept away from humans for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's like highly enriched stuff and so on. But some of these reactors, I think, use different types of nuclear fuels. I'm not 100% sure, and some of these can use mixed types of fuels and so on, so it gets a little murky, and there's a lot of details.
Well, the thing that I think turned me against nuclear power was hearing people talking about nuclear waste and how, it has to be safeguarded for, anything from several thousand years to several hundred thousand years, and just them thinking that, we'll be able to do this, no problem. We'll just put up a sign or something like that, or just keep it secure. Just basically thinking that they would actually be able to pull that off for that amount of time and just not caring about future generations. There may be future for nuclear power plants when we are more advanced and can deal with the waste in a more logical way. But burying it in the ground, no, that's not the way to do it. And, with earthquakes and changes in regimes and people losing track of history, there's no way you can keep something like that safe for that amount of time.
Yeah, the science is interesting, and it's, there's a lot of virtues to nuclear science in general, but I don't think it scales up quite the way, the waste scales up with it. So when you try to manage, it's used in a lot of countries, used around the world a lot, but it...
Like it Japan.
Has, yeah, like Japan, so, anyway, it is not without problems, but I don't know. I mean, there's smaller sorts of reactors. There's a lot of interesting stuff that you can do, but, I don't think it scales up. It should not be how diffuse communities, like with a centralized power generation system, solve their power needs. I think that should be more of a local effort.
I just looked this up, actually. I just typed in nuclear waste from nuclear power plants, and this one sentence kind of bugs me a little bit that shows up. Currently, there are no permanent disposal facilities in the United States for high-level nuclear waste. Therefore, commercial high-level waste, known as spent fuel, is in temporary storage, mainly at nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
So if you have a nuclear power plant in your backyard, you have some spent fuel, some high-level nuclear waste there as well. And it's temporary until we destroy ourselves, I guess.
This was the whole debate about Yucca Mountain years and years ago, where they were wanting to, in I think conjunction with dearmament stuff, proposing to glassify nuclear waste. In other words, make vase and, no, I'm kidding, make very large plugs or whatever, maybe smaller little pucks of glass or crystallized, I don't know how you would do it, but turn it into sort of a solid form and then store it deep in a mountain. And I think that was never allowed or it did not ever get built. I don't think so. But that's kind of arrogance attached to it. It's like, well, we don't really have, it's not closed loop, right? And we don't really have a great way to deal with the outcome. And it's hard to work with. I don't know. Unless you have a whole lot of robots, people have to handle it at some point. And it's really, it's not good for humans to be around in general. So, anyway.
Yeah, and it's exactly that arrogance. That's what I think bothered me is, we'll be able to deal with this. And, I love science. I love development of new technology. But sometimes people just make assumptions that they know best and that they can't possibly make mistakes and that people who just, who don't get it are simply idiots and have to be talked down to or ignored completely. Something like this, way too important to just ignore. So, fossil fuels are definitely bad, but to say nuclear power is the solution is really, really being short-sighted. And we have these other solutions that we need to embrace and expand upon. And seeing great things out east with that solar plant being built.
Yeah, that's great. And people can control it. Like, they can be around it and check it and all of that. So exciting stuff. And that's really cool technology. I like that stuff. The stuff that is sort of like mimics nature and is sort of closed loop and so on and so forth. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of really, really exciting stuff happening there. And a lot of the products and parts and things you need are getting affordable. So it's cool.
Yes, absolutely. This is interesting. I told you about this story a little earlier. It's leaving the Earth now. It's going to another place. An article just came out in the Atlantic called "The Most Mysterious Star in Our Galaxy." And you know, I hate these articles that have pictures of stars, but they're actually just artist renderings. You notice that when NASA says they discovered blue skies on Pluto, and then you see an artist rendering of Pluto instead of the actual picture, which you know, is what people really want to see. So in this particular case, you're not really seeing anything except a bunch of stars that might not even be stars.
Or some sawdust that somebody forgot to sweep up.
Yeah. Show us the pictures, for God's sake. You know, it should be on the front page of the New York Times every day as a new picture from Hubble, because there's always something incredible and amazing to share. But anyway, this is really something. There's going to be a little bit of it, and maybe folks can do a little bit more research. In the Northern Hemisphere sky, hovering above the Milky Way, there are two constellations, Cygnus the Swan and Lyra the Harp. You know what? That's not important at all, actually. Anyway, between those constellations, there's an unusual star, invisible to the naked eye, but visible to the Kepler Space Telescope, which stared at it for more than 4 years, beginning back in 2009. They say, we've never seen anything like this. It was really weird. We thought it might be bad data or movement on the spacecraft, but everything checked out. Kepler was basically looking for tiny dips in the light emitted by the star. Instead, it was looking for these dips in more than 150,000 stars simultaneously, because these dips are often shadows cast by transiting planets, especially when they repeat periodically, as you'd expect if they were caused by orbiting objects. So anyway, what is this all about? As a light pattern, it basically suggests that there's a big mess of matter circling the star in tight formation. This is apparently something that's expected if the star was young, because there's dust and rock and all that kind of thing that would be there. But this star isn't young. If it were young, it would be surrounded by dust or give off extra infrared light. There doesn't seem to be an excess of infrared light around the star. It appears to be mature. And yet there is this mess of objects circling it, a mess big enough to block a substantial number of photons that would have otherwise beamed into the tube of the Kepler Space Telescope, which, by the way, is one of the most amazing things in the world, you know, that we can look through these telescopes and see things like this and learn things like this. Just that is probably some of the best science ever.
Yeah.
And I'm just so amazed by it sometimes. So basically, I'm skipping way ahead here. Let's see. It's a very long article. It's worth reading. It's in the Atlantic. It just came out. They are saying that. Hang on. Sorry. Looking for the actual dramatic thing here. Okay, Jason Wright, an astronomer from Penn State University, is set to publish an alternative interpretation of the light pattern. SETI researchers have long suggested that we might be able to detect distant extraterrestrial civilizations by looking for enormous technological artifacts orbiting other stars. Wright and his co-authors say the unusual star's light pattern is consistent with a, quote, swarm of megastructures, unquote, perhaps stellar light collectors, technology designed to catch energy from the star. When I saw the data, I was fascinated by how crazy it looked, Wright said. Aliens should always be the very last hypothesis you consider, but this looked like something you would expect an alien civilization to build. So that's the wow story of this year, I think.
Wow.
This could actually be something that could show another civilization. What they're going to do, though, they're going to point a massive radio dish at this star, see if it emits any kind of radio waves at frequencies associated with technological activity. If they see radio waves, they're going to follow up with the, and this is what they call it, the Very Large Array, VLA, in New Mexico, which may be able to say whether the radio waves were emitted by a technological source, like those that waft out into the universe from Earth's network of radio stations, including this one.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And assuming all goes well, the first observation would take place in January, with the follow-up coming next fall. And if things go really well, the follow-up could happen sooner. If we saw something exciting, we could ask the director for special allotted time on the VLA, and in that case, we'd be asking to go on right away. I'm not sure how far away this star is, because obviously things can't travel faster than the speed of light. So if it's, you know, a few million light years away, then what we're looking at already happened a long time ago. But it could be closer. The fact that it's invisible doesn't mean it's necessarily vastly distant.
Or maybe we could turn it on, like, with the right radio frequency, like, open it like a garage door and, you know, turn
hey,
the light
on. Hey, you tune into the right frequency, and all of a sudden you're going to be hearing all kinds of distant programming.
I would love to watch some alien programming.
Well, right now Rick and Morty is the closest you'll get to that.
Yes, you're right.
But that's and we saw the space station after the show last week.
We did.
Did anybody else see that? We announced it. We said 16 minutes after the show there would be a space station. And you know what? We forgot. We were driving, and suddenly I screeched to a halt, and I realized it was 16 minutes after 7, and we jumped out of the car and looked at it, and there it was.
It was one of the longest really hung out there, just the whole arc, right through the middle. It was really exciting to see. And then it drifted away. It just fell over some new construction on campus.
Yes.
That was that.
Yeah. Well, it was still exciting to see, and I hope some of our listeners were able to see it as well, because this kind of thing really is inspirational.
Yes.
You want to try taking phone calls? I know you have everything all set up over there. And
I'll try.
We had to bypass. Yes, it's on channel 9 this week, not channel 8. Yeah, that's channel 8. So turn that one down, turn channel. It's really not hard. Channel 8, yes. Turn that down, turn channel 9 up next to it. The one to the right, yes. All right. Great. That's it. And now I patched around it because it was broken before.
You're
remember?
Brilliant.
No, I'm not brilliant. I'm just it's basically
surviving.
I counted up by one is all I did. So everything's
okay,
perfect.
I'm going to switch us over.
This is Robert Klein speaking to you from WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Get me out of here.
And here we are.
Did you switch us while you were playing the ID? It sounded like you did both things at once.
Should I play it again?
No. No, don't.
I'm sorry. I might have cut off the ID.
Yeah, we might be split in two. So some of us might have appeared in the past and then ID, and then we finished our sentence. That's the nature of delay. We can take phone calls if you want.
Okay, so
just make sure you put that channel in the right position, too.
Hello, you're on WUSB.
Yeah, hi, Manny. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
A couple of details on that Shoreham story. The solar installation is going to displace many gophers as well as golfers. But
gophers.
I want to point out it's the tall grass golf course.
Okay. Well, you're talking about a different one because the one we saw was on a sod farm. I think there are two of them out there.
Yeah, but that could kill a golf course, too, so which is fine.
You know, there's other golf courses. There's lots of them.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of them.
Yeah.
What we didn't have many of was the evacuation.
That's certainly true, and that's another thing that really turned me against nuclear power was seeing all the evacuation sirens in a 10-mile radius. You know, that kind of made things a little nerve-wracking.
Well, one of the interesting sites that they had picked was that 10-plex movie site up on the North Service Road just east of 112, the site that they wanted to use for a casino now. So the people don't want a casino. They didn't want a evac site, but they had no actual authority to even, you know, appropriate that site as an evacuation site back in the day.
Yeah. Interesting.
Just like the Nassau Coliseum, you know, with the 5 showers that they were going to use for people to clean themselves off with, and so they passed out the handy wipes to wipe the cars off.
Uh-huh. Wow. Some good history here.
Yeah, but you know what? I always felt that, I'll get off the air and let somebody else on, but I always felt you could get quite a few low-paid workers to, you know, with a bicycle chain sprocket set up, like, and for many, many lifetimes, for the amount of money that they spent out there, they could be pedaling that turbine away.
Not a bad idea, and getting a lot of exercise at the same time.
That's true. That's
hey,
true. Put people to work.
Where are you calling from?
Great night.
All right. Take care.
Hello, you're on WSB.
Hi, I just this is Joseph. I just want to let them know that I love the show, but Bernie Sanders was never governor of Vermont.
Oh, he wasn't? Oh, my mistake.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow, okay.
Thank you for the fact check.
He was mayor of Burlington, was he?
Burlington.
Okay, that's it?
But
he was senator.
Right from there to Congress.
Senator Bernie Sanders, yeah.
I'm red-faced with shame.
Two senators, yeah.
Okay, he wasn't governor. Wow.
I mention that because in the New Yorker, I think two issues ago, there was a big article about Bernie, who I am very much in favor of.
Uh-huh.
And they say that some of his critics say that it's interesting that he's been voted senator so many times, but couldn't be elected governor. And they feel that the Vermont folks there don't mind, and this is a quote from, I think it's a quote, I don't have it in front of me, from the New Yorker magazine saying they don't mind throwing a hand grenade into the Senate, but they don't want him governing the whole state.
Interesting. I wonder if there's any truth to that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he certainly isn't somebody who just goes with the flow. He's going to, you know, he's going to say what he means and try to make it happen.
Put people on their ear, so to speak.
Exactly.
Well, is there anything you're looking for in tonight's debate?
Well, I just would like to see Bernie stand out and really try to. I think he has a year to explain to people what democratic socialism is. I think once they understand what it is, they won't be against it.
Well, that's a tough sell in this country, especially. We still are suffering from the Red Scare. And I don't know. I don't know if you can say that you're a socialist in any sense and get enough votes here. It'd be nice, you know, to see people get a little bit more enlightened as to what that actually means. But I don't think that's going to happen in the next year.
But he's already moved the party to be against the pipeline and the whole Trans-Pacific deal.
Yeah, he could do tremendous things as far as moving the party in one direction and making it more progressive. That would be amazing. That might be the best we can hope for.
To a certain extent.
Yeah, he certainly has. And hopefully tonight will be another opportunity to do that.
Hey, great show, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, so that's definitely something to keep in mind, that he could change the conversation a bit.
Yeah, it's going to be a new conversation, I think. Yeah. A little bit different pace than the previous ones. For the other parties.
It'll be like adults. This is the adult conversation now.
The big kid table.
Well, it's just ridiculous, some of the things that they were saying the last, you know, a couple of Republican debates, you know, things about immigrants and global warming and just a lot of stupid things, really.
Yeah, hopefully the quality of dialogue and stuff will be a little better as far as abject intolerance and so on.
631-632-6901 is our telephone number. I'd like to hear what they have to say about gun control and immigration and international relations and which country they're going to bomb and things like that.
Yes, those are all at the top of my list as well. Again, the phone number, 631-632-6901, 26901 if you're on campus.
And if you're on that mysterious store, we don't know what number you have to dial to get out. But you can probably figure it out. You're a more advanced civilization.
Call the operator.
Call information. They'll tell you. The thing I wanted to mention, though, and this is something I mentioned to you, we're talking about solar farms and things like that. And
yeah.
I was wondering, why on earth can't they also put wind turbines on solar farms? You know?
Like
you
co-locate.
All this space, right? You stick a wind turbine, you know, every few whatever, you know, however distant you place them apart from each other, you have this open area with wind. You could be generating both kinds of electricity in the same place.
It's like a sort of renewable hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that actually does work, and it actually works really well. I know this because I've seen different kinds of houses, like Earthship style houses. And when you are running your own bank of batteries, a mixed use is actually preferred. It's helpful instead of just having one or the other, especially if you live in a place that doesn't have sun all the time. So that's why for small setups, you'd have maybe a small wind turbine as well as a small panel. For larger stuff, I think they commit or invest in one or the other, but it would be interesting, and I think as it matures, you'll see better use of these technologies and mixing and the standards supporting that across types of new forms of energy.
You know, it'd be cool to have some kind of technologies, of course, in the future, where at night a wind turbine sprouts out of the ground and works all night long and then goes back in and the solar panels take over.
Like retractable.
Why not?
Kind of like a telescoping antenna on an old car.
I have no idea how to build these things, but I do know how to come up with ideas.
No, I like that. Yeah. That's really good. I would just love to watch that move up and down like a bullard.
Uh-huh. So you scientists out there, take some notes, and maybe we could invent something together. It'd be kind of cool.
Yes, and if you're taking notes and you would like to shape those notes, wordsmith them into the form of a letter. We accept letters, and you can write to otw@2600.com, and we'll read it, and we may even read it on the air. If you don't want us to read it on the air, just tell us, and we won't. But we'd love to hear your comments. We'd also love to take your call. We're taking calls tonight, 631-632-6901. This is WUSB. You're listening to Off the Wall with Kyle and Emmanuel.
Hello. And we only have about a minute left to take phone calls, so if you're going to call, do it now.
Yeah, and, you know, we may not have time because guess what? It's fundraising season. Yeah.
Next week it begins.
It's the harvest, reap what you sow, mega extrava radio donate-a-thon, and we're bringing that to you, live and direct.
Did you know so many things they were reaping out east yesterday?
Reaping hard, yeah. I mean,
so many crops.
It's when you go and you get the pumpkins, and you people are saddling up to carving them now, I bet.
There's corn and there's a phone call.
We have a phone call, please. Oh, it just went away.
It went away?
It's like a thought. It just,
but don't get nervous, people.
Fleeting.
We don't bite, at least not over the phone.
Wow.
All right, we'll give them another 30 seconds, or her another 30 seconds.
631-632-6901.
We're not even asking for funds.
26901 if you're on campus. You know, there are a lot of students out there, probably getting ready for midterms.
There's a phone call. Quickly.
Hello, you're on WUSB.
Yeah, the Brookhaven National Lab has a reactor.
They have a very tiny reactor. You're right, they do. It generates like a really minimal amount of power just for experimentation, right?
No, actually it generates a great amount of power because they have they had the largest cryogenic atom splitter, you know, the circular
particle accelerator,
that's right.
Yes.
And a few years ago they had a balloon festival, and a couple of firemen friends of mine that worked there had to confiscate a balloon that wandered into the property, and they had to incinerate it with all the clothes and everything else because it was in an area that had runoff from the reactor and pumps in the ground.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
We have to look into this a little more. Okay, I knew they had something. I didn't know it was something of that scale.
Yeah, wow. Now they don't have a balloon festival there anymore.
Yeah.
Wow.
Get it together, Brookhaven.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, to be continued.
Right,
thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Our window on delay is closing, so we need to exit delay.
All right. Quick. Get the exit delay device,
and we're out of delay.
And we're way, way out of delay.
Now the phone calls are pouring in. You see, this always happens.
Gosh,
every
so
time.
Calls.
Look, before we leave, though, a couple of exciting bits of news. Euro 2016 is happening next year, but the qualifying matches have been taking place. And this time, there are countries that have qualified for next year's, it's kind of like a mini World Cup, only in Europe. Countries like Wales and Northern Ireland and Albania and Iceland and Slovakia, they've all qualified. And in many cases, it's the first time they've ever qualified.
I love that Albania made it because we've been there.
Uh-huh.
And it was neat. And that's just, it is a real interesting mix, as you pointed out.
Two teams, though, that failed to qualify were former champions Greece and the Netherlands, the latter being absent from Euro for the first time in 32 years. They actually lost a division to Iceland. How is that possible? Iceland has, like, the number of people that Stony Brook has, and they were able to beat the Netherlands in that group. I'm blown away by it. I'm all in favor of it, too.
Well, practice. I mean, they're doing something right. I don't know.
All right, Iceland. We're rooting for you, I guess.
I'm excited. And I can't wait. I want to watch some of these games for real.
You'll have to wait till next June.
Oh, darn.
All right, we're out of here. Again, otw@2600.com is our email address. Finn's up next. I guess we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening.